Welcome back to Bubble Trouble, conversations between two deepfakes masquerading as humans with pulses. In fact, those advancements in AI make those deepfakes so popular the humans can call it a day. That is the real-life double act of the independent analyst Richard Kramer, that's him, and the economist and author Will Page, and that is me. And we train on your pain. How's that for a new model, Richard? We're training on your pain. That is, why does it seem like we never learn from past bubbles that got our portfolios into trouble? When will we not get fooled again? Now listen, we've been exposing the sycophants and stenographers for over a century. That's pod years, not our own combined years. And we've got to know what you, the audience, listen to for our show. That is, you want to impress friends at dinner parties. You want to have that coffee table chatter about something you wish you knew more about. So in this week's episode, we're going to look forward as opposed to backwards and prepare you for the next big sexy blockbuster tech IPO. You've read all about it. That's right. It's going to be Reddit this week. More in a moment.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Richard, welcome back to the show. We've been on our travels. You've been Hong Konging it. I've been Austin, Texas to see it. How did it go in Hong Kong?
I'll tell you, Hong Kong has changed an enormous amount, not only from 5 or so years ago when I was going more frequently, but even from the last time I was there a year ago.
Changing for the better?
I don't think so. I remember the podcast we did a couple of episodes ago where Linda Yua came up with the phrase, kill the chicken to scare the monkey. I think Hong Kong has been slowly strangled by mainland China and is losing its mojo quickly. And frankly, having then gone from there to Singapore, you can see that there's been an enormous amount of transfer of wealth, of people, of energy, creativity, etc. from Hong Kong to Singapore.
Stick with that for a second. I was once told the difference between Hong Kong and Singapore was that Hong Kong, you were allowed to protest. That was the one sort of differentiating factor. Is that still the case, or is it actually kind of the tables have turned?
The tables might very well have turned. I wasn't in Singapore long enough to appreciate whether or not there was any meaningful political dissent, but it's hard to be too upset with a government that generally manages things so incredibly well. It's clean. Everything works. That it's just an incredibly organized society. And I'll tell you, if there's one place on earth I'd want to be a citizen where I was out of work or on benefits or what have you, it'd be in Singapore, because the public housing there is immaculate. The services are very good. It's just a lovely environment in a lot of ways.
Wow. So as much as people in the West like to throw mud at countries which are not a pure democracy, Singapore's got a lot of advantages perhaps we don't acknowledge to their fullest.
Yeah.
We'll come back to my travels in Texas in part two, but what I want to do with this podcast is look forward. We've got a big sexy tech IPO coming on the market. Maybe it's not going to be that big, and perhaps it's not going to be that sexy. But it is tech, and it is an IPO, so it sits straight in the middle of the lane of bubble trouble. And for our podcast to work for our audience, I keep on hearing that we have to assume no prior knowledge. That's when it really works, like you did with Dan for Duration and explained what happened to Silicon Valley Bank. Let's just assume no prior knowledge here and walk us through the big sexy tech pot IPO coming down the pipes. What is Reddit and what is an IPO? Build a foundation, sir.
I think most people know what an IPO is. It's when a company that's privately held offers those shares to anyone who might want to buy them, although usually they're distributed directly to large investors. And Reddit, I think, is also very well known. They claim to have 260 million monthly active users, about 70 million every day. Certainly in many subcultures of fandom, of nerddom, of any sort of geeking out on any particular narrow topic, you'll find a Reddit of like-minded people around the world who want to share their enthusiasm and post things. But actually, as a business in the $900 billion global advertising world, which is its main source of income, it is an absolute minnow. It's a bit of plankton, really. It has $800 million of sales, which, just to put it into context, last year, Meta added $18 billion of sales extra, not on top of the $120 billion they already had. So they added $18 billion of sales,
yeah,
which is basically like revenues. Saying, which is basically like saying they added a business the size of Reddit about every 2.5 weeks. Now, Reddit also lost $140 million at the operating level and burned $74 million of cash. So this business has really struggled to become one of those big businesses, and it's struggled to make money. Now, unusually for a niche publisher, and it's really a niche publisher, the top 10 advertisers are 26% of sales. Now, if you remember companies like Vice and BuzzFeed and all these sort of new generation publishers that were all the rage 5 years ago, naturally, they're all in a business now. They all
went crash and burned.
But their idea was that they would have millions of advertisers. And in all those individual niches, you would attract lots of individuals who wanted to try to sell something to somebody else or influence people or what have you. So that concentration of advertisers feels very unusual. And if you look at their homepage, it feels a lot like sort of Yahoo circa early 2000s. It's one of those portals. It's got a little bit of this, that, and the other, and scratch beneath the surface. And I'll leave this as the last point. It's obviously not entirely a brand safe platform. So if you do r/porn, I think you'll find quite a lot on Reddit and plenty of other topics too, which are just not going to pass muster for most mainstream advertisers.
Perfect. Oh, a wonderful primer. You're not singing from the hymn sheet that's their prospectus here. You're singing from the alternative hymn sheet.
And again, Reddit is a great cultural influence vehicle in the same way as Twitter is, but we've had multiple bubble troubles on Twitter and just how difficult they found it to make money and create a real business.
Now, what you were describing earlier in terms of how every sort of minutiae topic can be discussed on Reddit, it reminds me of how I've described podcasts. In fact, this gets quoted a lot of times when I describe podcasts as a sea of niches. Maybe these threads on Reddit are a sea of niches as well, but there's one niche which jumps out at me. Some people have heard of Reddit. Some of those other people would have heard of Robinhood. And some of those other people would have heard of a thread called Wall Street Bets. Can you unpack this one to me? Because that was a real sort of stick it to the man, anti-capitalist motivator of how can we beat the market at its own game? That was my impression of it. But walk me through Wall Street Bets and what made it so infamous.
Look, Reddit is effectively a giant bulletin board with multiple categories and subcategories and subcategories. And in the same way as you have chat rooms on Bloomberg that traders exchange information about whether or not a stock is going to go up or down, Reddit hosted Wall Street Bets and many other chat rooms or bulletin boards where individual day stock traders could influence stock prices and discuss whether they're going to go up or down. And indeed, they coordinated themselves in a way that, were they working for large regulated firms, probably wouldn't have been agreed upon in the same way. But they found that by aggregating millions of individual investors, they could do the same thing that every large firm is trying to do, which is move the market. Now, as this meme stock bulletin board, it became this echo chamber for all manner of PR, both professional firms checking the reputation of companies, investors trying to look at what stocks are going to go up or down, or indeed, now as is discussed about Reddit, that it's got all sorts of nefarious influencers of all stripes, Russian, Chinese, whomever, all trying to steer the public conversation in one way or another. In the same way as the Wall Street Bets guys try to steer the conversation about their favorite stocks to go up to the moon.
Real quick, is there an element here of irony come on in, which is Wall Street Bets was a stick it to the man thread, and now presumably they're leading for the man to invest in their company as it approaches the IPO?
Yeah, and there are lots of other reasons for companies needing to IPO, needing to retain their staff by giving them hope that they can have a rags to riches story by owning stock options. You can look to find additional places to raise capital or try to use that capital to make acquisitions. Yeah. So lots of reasons to do an IPO. We could probably cut that out.
Yeah. So hashtag this time it's different, or is it really that different? But with this Reddit IPO, I have read and heard chatter of they're going to try and make the most powerful posters part of the party, a sort of friends and family deal for some of the most influential posters on Reddit. I struggle to see how that actually works in practice. It sounds like it's perhaps nice propaganda on the run-up to your ringing a bell on Wall Street, but are we really talking about a friends and family package to what is essentially just a message board?
Reddit relies on these enormous, I think 100,000 Redditors or editors of a particular thread. So you could start your own thread on Scottish rugby and you could be the Redditor and you could be the editor of it. And only people who would post certain things would be allowed, and you would be the content moderator of that thread. And in effect, all of these, this UGC, user-generated content, and all of the effort of these devoted Redditors is free labor that Reddit is surfing off of. So they've got to throw these people a bone at the same time as they're throwing themselves rich pay packages. Because the last thing they want is that for all of these Redditors to revolt and take flight just at a time when they're hoping to cash in. So just, it's exactly like the Wall Street Bets guys. The Redditors could stick it to the man by shorting Reddit stock and then all resigning en masse.
And that would all get them documentary contracts with Netflix.
It would. It could do indeed.
It reminds me of like investing in a snowman. If it's user-generated content, what makes you think it's a fixture and fitting that can't just disappear overnight as well? And one last thing I want to tap on before we get to the break here is just the culture inside a company like Reddit. It portrayed itself, and I've met a few people at Reddit in my time, of being anarchistic, without rules, run fast and break things, ticking all those types of aspirational tech utopian boxes. But when you go public, you have to deal with compliance. When you go public, you have to deal with regulation. And in my book, at the end of the book of Pivot or Tarzan Economics as a Hardback, I introduce these terms called builders and farmers. At some point in a tech company's journey, the builders leave and the farmers come in. I'm just throwing that concept at you, Richard. It's going to be interesting to see what direction Reddit takes when the builders leave and the farmers come in, given the entire thing was built against the farmers, is built for the builders, is built to have no rules, no room for squares. How does it work when you have compliance sitting front and center on your entry?
Let me step back a little bit, because the CEO of Reddit, who had left and then come back and is now the CEO, was one of the two main founders of it. And you're right, this company has always had this freewheeling, anarchic, anything goes. You want to start your very own bulletin board on a particular topic, there's a subreddit for you. Will fit you in. And if people come to participate in it, we'll continue to direct traffic towards it and even sell advertising against it. Now, unlike a YouTube creator, you, the Redditor, doesn't get a slice of that advertising. So that might grate against the anarcho-syndicalists who feel like they're happy to share, but they don't want someone making a profit on their backs. Now, the other key thing about that move from builders to farmers is the whole purpose of people coming to Reddit is somehow to share in a kind of non-commercial way. And once you start imposing those farming rules, well, I'd flip the question on its head and say, why is this 20-year-old business only now thinking about making a profit? Because clearly, if you want to run a business as a cooperative syndicate, but you're not that fussed about making money, you might be 20 years down the road still only an $800 million business in a digital advertising market that for the big three, Amazon, Meta, and Google, added $40 billion of sales last year on top of what they are already doing.
I want to be a fly on the wall at the next earnings call and hear you ask these questions.
Well, they won't let me on those next earnings calls because they will have their roster of the 16
sycophants and stenographers.
They will be there. Congratulations on a great quarter. And Steve, the CEO, tell me, how are you planning to monetize Reddit in different ways in the future? And they'll say, thank you for that question. What a surprise, because we agreed it ahead of time. We're planning to monetize in these various ways. And again, being a collective of user-generated content, Reddit needs to keep those contributors engaged and not feel like they're being ripped off or their work is going to fund the management and the business model of Reddit to make enormous profits. So again, they need to go from a loss to even break even. But let's see if they can become super profitable like a Meta or a Google. Let me give you a few other data points on Reddit that just set it into context of some of the big guys. Now, they claim to be one of the internet's largest corpuses of information with 1 billion posts and 16 billion comments ever. Now, bear in mind that Meta claims they have 3.6 billion in their family of users. And of course, they're posting and commenting a lot more than one time a day. So I think that Reddit is a tiny speck compared to the megastars that are the large tech platforms. Another thing, just to show you how doubtful people are about what they see on Reddit, just as a general rule, they did their own survey of 4,000 US Redditors. These are the people who are deepest in on the platform. And 75% of respondents said they believe Reddit is a trustworthy place to inform them about new products or in a specified category, which means 25% of the people who are their most ardent users don't believe what they see on the platform. And I read that and I said, that's one of these things. Of course, a 4,000 person survey doesn't tell you a lot, but that 25% of your best users already don't believe anything you say, that's not a great signal for advertisers.
I think that gives us a perfect way to close out part one with a really clear understanding of what Reddit is and importantly, what Reddit isn't. And I think we're going to call this podcast Reddit and Weep, pun intended, because You don't feel much hope for this next big sexy tech IPO. In part two, I want to go down the rabbit hole and explore down rounds, because what they thought they were worth doesn't appear to be what they might be worth as we get closer to ringing the bell. Back in a moment.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back to part two of Bubble Trouble, where we are dissecting the hot new IPO of the day or the week, Reddit. But before that, I have to ask, Will, you've just spent a week at the uber cool South by Southwest Festival in Austin. Aside from the fact of your barbecue and your partying, what was the most interesting vibe? This was the show you came back from and couldn't believe yourself with the NFTs, and I had to sort of walk you through what a wash trade was. What was the hot hype this year?
Well, let me take you through NFTs are not for me. Prior to flying out to Austin, Texas, I was sitting in the director's box of a very famous English football club. And you wouldn't believe, but all the chief commercial operators of these clubs came up to me and said they loved that particular podcast because your description of wash trades, which is now 2 years old, I mean, it's officially catalogued, to use music terminology, beautifully explained the actions of football agents. So I'm sitting there at a table next to Gareth Southgate, believe it or not, hearing agents come up to my table saying, your co-presenter, Richard Kramer, he's phenomenal. He explained to us what a wash trade was. This is what we've been looking at all the time. So I don't want to pipe up your ego here, Richard, but it was very bizarre how a podcast we did 2 years ago, completely unscripted, completely unplanned, you just threw me hot in the mic, it still resonates in March 2024.
So what was the heat this year?
So the heat this year in bronze, I'm going to give it to AMD because I got to meet Dr. Lisa Su, the founder and CEO of AMD, which is based in Austin. I didn't realize that. It presents itself as a Silicon Valley company, but believe me, the bulk of the operations are and increasingly moving into Austin. That's a really important point. In silver, I'm going to give it to Jack Conte, the CEO and founder of Patreon, who talked about how the creator economy is in a mess. The follower is dead. The lack of use of a subscriber button on YouTube. And that's something we got to get back into, because you were piercing that bubble first, the creator economy. And now I've got the founder of Patreon saying, there's some serious headwinds here if you want to be a creator. It's really interesting. And in gold, I'm going to give it to a woman who's 87 years old. Guess who that woman is?
Tell me, Will. There's Jane a lot Fonda. Of 87-year-olds. Jane Fonda. Okay.
Jane Fonda took the stage on climate change, and we got to get her on the show. I know that's never going to happen in a month of Sundays, but we've got to get her on the show. She was incredible, incredibly beautiful, incredibly eloquent, and just funny. And when she talked about how the climate change skeptic lobbyists, the energy companies, hired the same lobbyists who used to work for the tobacco firms. I mean, you can take the argument either way, but the way that she explained that point, where did they hire people to defend the natural gas and oil companies? They hired out the tobacco lobbyists. That's where they moved their jobs to. My jaw was on the floor. But she was so funny saying to all the ladies in the room, don't date these people. If they offer you a drink, don't take that drink. If they offer you to take you for a meal, don't eat that meal. But Jane Fonda, of all the people I met and saw, Gary Clark Jr., Scooter Weintraub, all these people, but Jane Fonda was the one woman who stood above the crowd for me and giving a speech, a message that I'll never forget. Incredible.
But was she preaching to the converted there? Because in that ballroom in Austin, that was full of people who were already predisposed to the climate crisis message, as opposed to the 100-mile ring road that goes around Austin with 8 lanes in every direction of people driving giant SUVs who aren't listening.
So she did describe Austin as a sea of Democratic blue surrounded by an ocean of Republican red. And that's a nice way to think about Austin within the state of Texas. And I think to your point, yes, this was an easy round of applause for Jane Fonda. Perhaps less easy when you go up against these people in the Senate and try and produce actual policy change.
Okay, let's get back to the Reddit IPO. Fascinating diversion. Sounds like you had a great time.
I had.
Let's talk about this IPO.
All right, so we've got this IPO coming. I'm assuming, just real quick, are we looking at the usual suspects of bankers and prospectuses are going to be coming out here to describe this IPO?
So I'll tell you a couple of things I found very amusing, and you can take that in the air quotes as you like, for the Reddit IPO. First of all, you've got this relatively tiny company. It's $800 million of revenue, but there's 16 banks floating it, including Morgan Stanley and JP Morgan and Goldman Sachs. And all the top banks are marshaled in to float this tiny little company. And of course, to only float 10 or 15% of it. Now, there's also a CEO package, which says the CEO gets a big bonus, a big unlock of share options, if he keeps the stock above $5 billion for 10 consecutive days. That's not a really long-term incentive. That's 10 days. And that to me just seemed absurd. So why do you need so many banks behind this to float such a small slice of this company? You give the CEO this crazy short-term incentive. This all just smells like, let's get something out the door as quick as we can.
Right. So you've answered the first question. So now I want to tackle this subject called down rounds, going down a rabbit hole with down rounds. I think for our audience, as you did with that beautiful episode we did on Silicon Valley Bank, where you used investing in your property to explain how duration catches you out. You know, you could put all this money into building extensions to your house, but it's going to take a lot longer for the appreciation of the house to cover that cost of the extension. Talk to me about a down round with respect to a mortgage, just so we leave none of our audience behind here. What do we mean when we say down rounds? Because we know there's a big one happening here.
So companies raise money at hopefully, successively larger valuations. The first day you found a company, you might start with $10 from you and your friends, and that might be worth the entirety of, or $100, it might be worth the entirety of the company. Then when you're getting a little bigger, you might need another $900, right? But you don't want to sell nine times the value of your company. You only want to sell a small slice of it. So eventually you have investors adding in money, similar amounts of money, or maybe slightly larger, but forever smaller slices of the company. And that's how companies get to be worth $500 million, $1 billion, $5 billion, $10 billion. And all of a sudden, Reddit at one point was supposedly worth $10 billion. And that was on the basis that maybe one small group of investors invested $100 million for 1% of the company, right?
Right.
It only reflects the last portfolio valuation where someone was willing to put money in. Now, someone may have already invested $1 billion for half the company, but they were using that $100 million at $10 billion to inflate the value of Reddit and make it seem like it was worth more. It may have been in the prevailing time when that investment was made. Everything was being valued by so much more because interest rates were zero. So there was effectively a 0% risk-free rate. You had to throw your money into something. But in all of these examples, there's frequently that point where you wipe the lenses of your glasses and realize they were just being rose-tinted. And when you look through that clear glass, you realize that what you thought was worth so much is worth somewhat less. Or at least no one in the market will pay you what you thought it was worth, so you have to settle for less. And that is effectively what a down round is. You're settling for less. You're willing to get an incremental additional investment into a company at a lower overall value for the company. Now, the Financial Times quoted a woman at a obviously self-interested VC fund praising the down round, saying, really, it's a signal of rationality. But it's also a recognition that there was a total abrogation of valuation discipline and people lost their heads in the past years.
Yeah.
And you're now just maybe realizing your precious house is not worth $100 million because you hoped it would be.
The reality being that we got fooled again. That's what it says to me. It's not
exactly
like, wow, we should welcome. It's like, how did we end up getting ourselves back into bubble trouble? The purpose of this 110 episode show is just, how do you keep on making these mistakes? Should we kind of, I'm thinking of grouping a lot of these tech companies from the 2021 pandemic era as the class of 2021. Is it Reddit, Instacart, is there other companies which have seen during the pandemic hugely ridiculous valuations and have come back to earth with a crash bang wallop?
Yeah, I mean, Instacart is one that ended up IPOing at a much lower valuation than its peak. It did successfully IPO, but again, has a very tiny percentage of the company which is being traded. So you can't really say what the company is quote unquote worth unless all of those shares would trade freely and you'd see if there was $5 or $6 or $8, $10 billion of demand for that company and equally see how sustainable its business is, not in the febrile, exciting couple of quarters after IPO, but when it settles into becoming a more mature business and has to sustain exciting growth rates that attract investors.
I hear it. Let's talk about what Reddit can do once that bell is rung, once it's on the market, once it's got pure transparency and financial compliance to reckon with. What can a company like that, so dependent on user-generated content, which to reiterate in part one, feels like I'm investing in a snowman because those user generators can evaporate overnight, what can it do to diversify its revenue streams? Or is it just a pure ad play?
It is today a pure ad play, but they have taken a big step to diversifying their revenue stream, which is they have sold for 3 years the rights to all the content on Reddit for Google to use as a training set for its AI
language
models.
So from Robinhood trading order flow to Reddit selling training data, stick it to the man, why don't you?
No, you're not sticking it to the man. It's the opposite in the sense of all of those Redditors who thought they were joining this anarcho-syndicalist bulletin board that was never going to monetize them. Now, instead, every word that they type in their Reddits is going to be read and analyzed by Google. And that $60 million a year that Reddit gets paid for that is not going to those creators. It's going to Reddit.
Counterculture.
So they have fully signed what I've referred to many times as
the
data donation
agreement.
Yeah, absolutely. You agree to donate all your data forever and we'll monetize the bejesus out of it and you'll get none of it. Or do you like that? And you know what? By the way, come on, Will, you know I skewer the creator economy and I just never thought we'd all be walking down the street chucking left, right, and center fivers out to every busker that we heard. I mean, this idea that we all have the opportunity to be creators and make a living from it, it was always far-fetched. The economics just never made sense. And it was one of those things as well that sounded like a great idea when we had nothing else to do but stay locked in our houses and apartments. And now down the road, it's clear that whole hype train was yet another bubble.
the class of 2021 comes undone, I guess.
Yep. Where's your friends at Cameo? What happened to Cameo, Will?
That was a brief cameo, pun intended.
Yes, indeed. And oh, by the way, remember South by Southwest back in a year before the NFT was Clubhouse.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Whoa. I mean, I want a Clubhouse t-shirt somewhere that says social audio is going to be big. I just want that t-shirt because for a hot minute, everybody was dying to get in for a $4 billion valuation from a startup. So let me throw this back at you because I really want to know with you maybe are going to be more positively disposed to Reddit. If you were an investor, if you were selling Reddit to investors, what do you think you'd sell it on the basis of? They've sold their IP to Google. They are obviously have trouble scaling up a giant advertising business. They're growing 20%, but that really only means adding about 150 million of sales last year. What would you do to make Reddit look sexy in the eyes of investors?
You're asking me to put lipstick on a pig?
Absolutely.
Listen, you've had the case for the prosecution. If you're giving me the case for defense, I'm not so sure after listening to you sort of bring this company through the dry cleaners. I have wondered whether you could roll up that chatter into a Bloomberg-type initiative.
Sure.
That is, if you're a company that's a broadcaster, that is one-to-many, and wants to become a narrowcaster, which is get the feedback effects of many one-to-ones, if you're a company that wants comments, there's a value to comments, maybe you could roll Reddit up into that, which is just give me a ton of comments real quick. Give me a ton of customer reviews real quick. Maybe there's a customer proposition there as an enterprise value. But to your point in part one, Richard, I struggle to see how that's going to work if you've got a lot of dodgy stuff going on the platform.
Yeah, and let me give you what I would say is the buy case for Reddit. One is that it can become a meme stock among the Redditors themselves, and with such a small free float and with the Redditors themselves cut into the deal, they may want to see it ramp up. It may go to $50 billion valuation, not for any valuation logic, but for the fact that it becomes one of those playthings the way GameStop did. It could also be seen as a window into youth culture and a way in which you could engage audiences that traditional media is struggling to reach. And it sits outside of the Metas and the Googles of the world that have such a grip on the market, and even the Twitters of the world, which are having a difficult time monetizing. So the way Wall Street will spin the story is clear. Every one of the most famous internet analysts at the biggest banks are going to be saying wonderful things about the opportunity at Reddit and falling all over themselves to praise it. And by the way, this deal is going to pop and have a highly engineered first day trade up of a huge amount because they know they can whip up more potential demand in a world awash with money than there are likely shares to trade. And it will be hot for at least a hot moment, if not for a bit longer.
A hot moment. You could potentially build a buy case that you're buying into future trends. And there are companies which have sold successfully based on future trends, but they haven't sold for billions. They tend to have sold it for millions. And I'd worry about the valuation, and I'd also worry about the snowman effect. My other concern, Richard, is just how are we measuring those users? At the very start of the show, you ran off some numbers about how many people are using this platform. I think it was close to 250 million people. How do we know those 250 million people are 250 million unique people with unique pulses? And what I mean by that is, as with podcast audiences, the risk of double counting these numbers is huge. Are we counting IP addresses? Are we counting somebody uses it on their laptop as the same person or a different person when they use it on their app? All this boot cooking that can happen with audience measurements. And just to remind our audience, for an app-based feature like Reddit, the real way that you do it is, I call it the triangulation. You look at downloads, which is a one-shot game. Has Richard downloaded the Reddit app? Then you look at active users, measured monthly, weekly, or daily. The nature of the beast determines which one suits best. And then you look at session count or session frequency. I need transparency in all three before I can buy into the fact that there's 250 million unique people with unique pulses using this Reddit for posting messages and memes. I think that's where my biggest concern is. Do the numbers stack up?
I would add some other concerns to that, but I don't think they matter in this situation because this is all about, does Wall Street have confidence to bring a money-losing tech business to the market and get them excited about it the way they were doing in spades in 2021. They couldn't do it all in 2022. And we're slowly trying to regain the confidence to do in 2023 with some of these IPOs, most of which didn't really go well. But Wall Street is desperate for this IPO gravy train to start back up again. They need the fees. They need the new companies to talk about with all the companies that disappear because of M&A.
They need to do that dance.
They need to do their dance. They are conflicted because without IPOs, without deals, they don't make money. So
my mission is your commission.
They desperately want this to work. Exactly. And they desperately want this to work. The question is this the right asset to make it work on? And one of the points made in all this down round discussion is how if a founder thought their business was worth $50 billion and someone comes along and says, we might be able to float it for 20, that's quite humbling if you really believe that $50 billion in the first place. Or if you're now a lot less concerned or a lot less confident in the future, you might say, you know what, let's take the 20 and run. So the market is not yet decided on whether it's ready to absorb a long string of new companies. And this is kind of a trial balloon to see how it goes.
I smell the risk. Now, we talked about how Reddit could help us guide us to the future. That is, future trends emerge first on Reddit, telling us where we need to be going as opposed to where we are, which is kind of like asking for a smoke signal. So to close out part two, and I want to thank you, Richard, for agreeing to this topic for the conversation, because it gives our audience forward guidance. We're not looking backwards. We have no rear mirror here. This is something that's coming up on the horizon. And with the Reddit IPO real close on the horizon, counting down the days, weeks now, give us a couple of smoke signals for the audience to look out for, because this story is going to get more and more headlines as it gets closer, right?
So the first smoke signal to be aware of when you look at anything that captures public consciousness, like the Reddit IPO or the Instacart IPO or any IPO, is these hot IPOs always have an inbuilt structural volatility. The first day pop, oh, it soared, it leaped, it jumped 20, 30, 50%. How fantastic. Obviously, unless you're one of those who have shares allocated to them, you didn't get that big first day gain. The first quarter script, in their first earnings, obviously, the company will want to have a few positive surprises and beat expectations, which obviously are set along with all the banks that are floating them to make sure that there's room for them to exceed whatever they promise to investors. But equally, you have a relatively small number of shares trading, and all those subsequent investors are venture capital funds now wondering, can I get to the exit in a secondary listing? Can I quietly sell some of my shares now that I could put a value on them? Can I see if the company can make some other transactions to allow me to exit my position because I've been sitting on this thing? Maybe I invested at $10 billion and now it's supposedly worth only $6 billion. So I need to get some money out and crystallize the value. So again, my first smoke signal is stand back and watch, because there's going to be some structural volatility in this company, not just on the first day, but in the first months it trades.
Yeah, the word pop really jumped out at me there. But I've heard that word so many times with IPOs, stock popped. And that should be a red flag as opposed to a green flag.
Right. That means they sold it too cheap.
Thanks for keeping it simple, sir. Smoke signal number two, what else should we be looking out for with regards to Reddit?
Not just with Reddit, but Reddit is a great example of this. Always look for the reality of the numbers and apply some common sense questions. For example,
like you did with, like, how long does it take for Facebook to generate the ad revenue in days that Reddit makes in a year?
Yeah, and you can look at the tiny average revenue per user that Reddit generates as a tremendous opportunity if they could only match what Meta or Google or others provide. But you could also need to bear in mind that tigers don't change their stripes, or leopards don't change their spots, or whatever analogy you want to use. I mean, if this business had been run for the last 20 years without ever turning a profit, it takes a huge management culture change. And you've seen this in companies you've worked for, and you've written about it in your Tarzan Economics / Pivot book. It's very hard for a company that doesn't make money to get the discipline to restrain itself and really focus on doing nothing but making money. And I think it's that reality of the numbers, the fact that this is still a business losing $140 million at the operating level and $800 million of sales, even in a year where they grow 20%, it doesn't mean that they can flip a switch and become an incredibly profitable company overnight. And the expectation will be that they'll be able to justify the valuation they're coming to the market at.
Last question. Are you going to set up an r/bubble trouble on Reddit as the IPO approaches?
I will not. I have enough screen time in my life, too much screen time in my life, actually, and I prefer to spend my time doing things that don't involve more time in front of screens. I have huge respect for some of the Reddit communities that I look at, especially for the deep technical knowledge that's shared on Reddit. I think there's some incredibly valuable stuff on it. I think there's some incredibly damaging stuff, but it does really raise questions to me why a platform like this has so little commercial ad revenue, given the supposed audience and engagement of the audience. Maybe there's some other stuff going on there that we can't yet see. And are you
years.
On Reddit? How often are you on Reddit, Will?
Rarely. When Robin Hood kicked off with the GameStop story, that made me read Reddit because journalists were talking about Reddit. But I've never felt inclined to become part of it if I can afford to stay away from it. So I'd rather read the Financial Times explain to me about Reddit than read Reddit itself. That's kind of where, that's my safe harbor, to use that expression.
A safe harbor is a nice place to hang out while you watch these super volatile IPOs pop 80% of the first day, feel bad because you weren't able to get any shares, be the fool that buys after it's gone up 80%, and then watch it, as we famously said, a stock that falls by 80% can still fall by half. So we'll see how this one goes. It's definitely got all of Wall Street behind it, cheering for it, and millions of Redditors around the world cheering for its success. But that's different from running a profitable business over time. Hopefully this has been a few insightful comments for anyone considering investing in Reddit. Don't worry, you won't be able to get shares right on the IPO. But I will check back next week with Will Page to see how many shares he purchased in the aftermarket and how they're doing. I'm sure you'll keep a keen eye on it. Thanks for joining us for Bubble Trouble and for Will bringing us his insights. And we'll be back next week with a fantastic guest. See you next week.
If you are new to Bubble Trouble, we hope you'll follow the show wherever you listen to podcasts, and please share it on your socials. Bubble Trouble is produced by Eric Newsom, Jesse Baker, and Julia Nett at Magnificent Noise. You can learn more at bubbletroublepodcast.com. Until next time, from my co-host Richard Kramer, I'm Will Page.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.